Headphones. Right. You know, both these hustle shows were not funny or good.
I kind of enjoyed the Hustle House one because it's like they started debuting like weird characters.
Yeah, but I think I see what you mean, but I think they were in complete squashes almost. Like, I liked the Flying Vampire thing.
I do think you need them squashes. It's a way of like introducing new characters. It's something that wrestling used to do much better than it does now. Now it's
Yeah.
if they introduce a character in squashes, they end up winning squashes for like months on end. You just need a few just to kind of get an idea of what the character is and what their strengths and weaknesses are and what the finisher is. That's the whole point of like introducing a character with a bunch of squashes. But like WWE, just if they have anyone win squashes, then they're winning squashes for months.
Yeah, I suppose it's not something I'm used to seeing from Japanese companies. Even Hustle, like when Zebra Kid, Zebra Man, even, not Zebra Kid,
Zebra
Zebra
Man,
Man,
Big Z.
when he debuted, he at least had a vaguely competitive match from what I
Yeah.
remember. Whereas, like, Monsieur de Budge, I don't know how to pronounce his
Monsieur de
name,
Barbarossa. He's
Monsieur de
known.
Barbarossa.
I don't know if you noticed, some of his gear is kind of hints at it. He's named after the Pirates of the Caribbean character.
Right, yeah, I thought so. I could tell it was a pirate gimmick, but the name didn't clock for me.
Yeah, Barbarossa was Geoffrey Rush.
You
And
know, I've never seen any of the Pirates of the Caribbean
the
movies.
first one's great. Like the
Right.
first one is like the reason why there's like six of them is because the first one is great. So it's like Johnny Depp's like he's all over the place. He's got this great pirate gimmick going on. And they don't go too overboard with the other characters. It's just like it's a nice rounded little love story slash adventure, and it's really good. And then each subsequent one is worse. So it's like a downward. It's like the whole series is basically falling down a flight of stairs, and it should have hit the bottom by now, but it's still going.
It's kind of like Shrek. The first Shrek movie was amazing. Every other one was awful.
I have no strong Shrek opinions, but yeah, Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one is legitimately a fantastic film. I really like the first one, and like I say, it's diminishing returns after that, but that's where the name comes from anyway. So the Barbarossa is named after Geoffrey Rush, who is the other pirate captain in the first Pirates of the Caribbean film, and he's kind of a zombie.
Yeah, I think I liked the gimmick. It was cool, but he as a wrestler is so green.
Oh yeah, that kind of goes without saying. So thanks to me, Cage Match now has a link between Monsieur de Barbarossa and the person who he was before, which is Jason the Legend.
I know the name. I can't tell you anything about him.
There's not really a lot to say. So what's this real? He's down as having a couple of matches in the late 90s, but basically his career is 0-1. So
Right.
he was in 0-1. Not really a lot else to say. He was in 0-1. There's tag matches here where it's Jason the Legend and the Predator, which is Sylvester Turkey, against
Takai, please,
Turkey,
please,
Sylvester
Takai.
Turkey. And he's tagging in this match against Tom Howard and
Oh, my God.
John Heidenreich.
What a
That
team.
was in 0-1 in 2003 in the summer, and I'm just like, what is that? And there's another tag. He basically was on a tour doing tags. He was tagging with Jason the Dynamite. I don't even know who that is, but they were tagging against the Ghaffari brothers, which I know you've sampled a little bit of Matt Ghaffari, but that again, like
Oh.
I can't believe
I was like, who the hell
exists.
are the Ghaffari brothers? Yeah. Matt Ghaffari is awful.
Matt Ghaffari is awful. He's got another brother, Shifu Ghaffari, who is worse.
Wow.
Yeah, so he did like a tag tour with a load of matches like that. And I'm guessing somebody liked him because he was big. I can't think of any other reason. But yeah, he's big and he's tall. And you'll never guess who tried to sign him after this, but like it just didn't pan out.
I mean, it has to be WWE.
It is WWE, yeah. They rebranded him as George King.
Okay.
And he had a trial match against Davey Boy's son somewhere in Canada, which couldn't have gone well because that was it. And he basically retired after that. So, but yeah, the best part of this whole thing is where he transforms from Jason the Legend into Monsieur de Barbarossa, because you got Takada. It's one of these wacky backstage things, and like Jason the Legend is dead, like the character's dead, so he's just lying there on a slab, and Takada shoots him with lightning, and then he awakens under a mask as Monsieur de Barbarossa, and that was the best part of the entire show.
Yeah, I didn't like the show at all, to be honest with you. It wasn't, see, that skit was good, but there wasn't, for Hustle House specifically, and even on the next Hustle show, there's not that many fun skits, and I think that's what really makes Hustle, because the matches are pointless, and all you're really there for is, you know, Zebra Kid. Zebra, why do I keep calling him Zebra Kid? Zebra Man. No, completely different person. Zebra Man going to the zoo, like that's Mick Foley doing the hustle. That's the kind of thing you're after when you're watching this these shows. Well, and
I did enjoy the introduction to Barbarossa. I thought that was good, and he basically squashed Shimoji Fuji in like 6 minutes, which was probably too long. Which was evidenced when they put him in an actual match. Tagging with Mark Coleman against Ryoji Sai and Katsuhisa Fuji on Hustle 4. And he just kind of got exposed in that match.
Yeah, it really, really stunk. It was the thing with that match that was weird to me. Sorry, I was just checking my notes to try and remember why. The thing with that match that was really weird to me is you have this sort of... Monsieur de Barbarossa is this real crazy, over-the-top, gimmicky guy. And he's against the shooty lads. And it just doesn't really fit.
And he's tagged with an MMA fighter as well in Mark Coleman.
Yeah. It was super-duper weird. And I think this is the sort of issue you're starting to see with Hustle, where you've got these, all the pride lads, and you've got the real sort of gimmicky lads, and there's a real disconnect. They don't really work in the same promotion to me.
I don't really think there should be that many pride wrestlers involved in this, because it's clearly going off on a bit of a wacky
tangent.
Well,
they're all over the main event scene, really.
Yeah, they're still all over the shows, and... Oh, shit. I don't think this is going to work. Hello?
Hi.
Hey. How are you doing?
Is Mossman Bossman?
No.
Who's Mossman? Okay.
Mossman is Tayo Kea, which I've been yelling at you for about 5 minutes.
Right. I see. Right. What do you think we should do?
Let's just carry on, and hopefully the internet holds up.
Okay.
I can edit it back in. It's fine.
Right. I think we should keep my singing and questions about Bossman.
I'll see what I can do. Okay.
Yeah. Right. I think should we just get into the shows properly?
Should we just talk about Hustle 4? Because Hustle House is just...
everything I want to say about Hustle House would come into Hustle 4.
Yeah, okay. Well, apart from Piranha Monster Z, who doesn't feature, but I think the less said about Piranha Monster Z, the better.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, I don't even remember who that is.
It was just a guy in a costume. I've no idea who was playing it.
Okay. Anyway. So, Hustle 4. Yeah, I have some questions for you, Arne. Hustle 4 starts with a man in a baseball uniform playing a coach.
Yes.
What's the deal with that? What's the deal with... Takada now has a bunch of dudes in face masks. What's going on?
Yeah, he's basically put masks on a load of people. I can't remember who the baseball guy is. He is a wrestler. He was an MMA guy. Nakajima or something. I can't remember the guy's name. I apologize. You've got Shimada is the guy that's like his translator. That's also like he and Takada are creative, so that's why they're in everything. You've got Anjo. He's the one with the Phantom of the Opera mask.
Yeah,
that's what's his first name? Yoji Anjo.
Yoji, yeah.
Yeah, so that's him. They've appointed a general manager. Don't know who that is. It's just basically a random suit, and yeah, weird things happen backstage.
Yeah, because the guy in the baseball outfit holds a picture of pork and he shouts about pork and Hashimoto for a bit. And then some matches get set up.
It takes about half an hour as well. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of pork talk. It was very interesting. I like how, because the chicken thing from Hustle 1, do you think that was planned or was that just weirdness?
I don't think any of this is planned.
Yeah, because they really run with the chicken thing. It looks like they're really running with the pork thing now. Is this a food promotion?
I'll be honest with you. I've not actually seen any Hustle shows past this one. So I don't know where we're going. It could spiral off into anything, really.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, my favourite part of the backstagey stuff at the start was that Generalissimo Takada uses his mind powers to manipulate the GM into the booking a card in his favour, I think. But he's doing like a weird like you thing into the camera, which
it was very uncomfortable.
Yeah, so that was like half an hour of strangeness that happened backstage.
And then we get an actual match it was Kazayashi and Spanky, who I like that they're like a regular team now on these.
They open every show. Yeah, every single one. I guess a variety of opponents.
It always seems to be just like East Coast indie dudes, because this was Josh Daniels and Sanjay Dutt.
Yeah. Sanjay Dutt is a very good fit for this promotion. Josh Daniels is not.
Yeah, Josh Daniels did a weird Elvis thing.
Yeah.
We will talk about Elvis-based wrestlers later.
He walked out to Elvis's music and with like an Elvis costume on, then he took it off and just went back to being like what he normally is, which is just a very technically solid mat wrestler.
Yeah, but you're right. I think Sanjay worked really, really well. I think the issue I've had with a lot of these openers is that we talked about this with Homicide, the Americans don't really seem to know how to work in Japan. Whereas Sanjay, you know, he was creating a lot of noise, he was doing chants and all of this stuff. He seems to really understand what to do, and it worked really, really well.
Well, if you get a character and your shtick over, then you're basically over in Japan.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people don't seem to realise. I think it's all about work rate and working hard, and it's not. It's about getting a character over. And that goes down, like, all the way down the line. So even if your character is like Tanahashi's the best. He's still got that whole, you know, air guitar business, his hair. It's the full package. The character is over. And you need to get your character over in Japan, otherwise nobody's going to care. And Josh Daniels is just not a character at all.
No, he was just a guy in there. And I haven't looked too deep into the cards, but I think this is the last time we see him.
I think it was 1 and 8. I think they took a look at him and went, let's see what he can do if we make him Elvis. Oh, nothing. Okay.
But, I mean, the match itself was pretty fun, mostly because of... mostly in spite of Josh. But it was a fun little match. The Hustle House show, actually, that's where I realized, because I sent you a message watching that, Kazayashi really, really got to show out in that tag match. And he was just amazing. Yeah. And he was just absolutely amazing. And even in this tag, he's still so, so good. And I'm really, really enjoying this team with Spanky.
Yeah. Like I said, I haven't watched past this show. I haven't gone and looked at a card. So at the end of this, I'll look at the Hustle House 5, the Hustle 5 card, and we'll see what's coming up. But I've not looked ahead, I don't know.
I hope we get to see some singles matches with Hayashi, because he's really good.
Yeah, I've always liked Kaz Hayashi, but like this is really like... It's like 2004 to around 2009. He's so good.
Yeah, we talked about it a bit on the first one, but these last two shows, I've just been blown away.
I think we've talked about Kaz Hayashi at length pretty much every time. It's been like, oh, Kaz Hayashi was fantastic in this opener, and it's every show, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great.
I don't have a hell of a lot else to say about the opener, because they're all basically the same sort of match. It's like Kaz and Spanky versus an assortment of opponents, and they're just pretty consistently good. As for selection of opponents, I don't know if it's a case of they just asked Spanky who he wanted to wrestle, and he's just picked out a load of dudes from like the US Indies.
It seems that way. I know, because there is that 0-1 link, I wouldn't be shocked if they're asking Steve Corino as well. Just sort of who to bring in.
I'm sure he was... There was something to do with Corino as a proper booking agent for Japanese talent to wrestle elsewhere.
So he was definitely doing that for 0-1. I don't know if he was doing that for many other places.
Yes, yeah, so I assume it went both ways.
Yeah. He was the sort of contact to get US guys into Japan. So I wouldn't be shocked if he's helping here in Hustle. I really liked the finish of this match as well. It was a weird, like, doomsday device thing where Spanky did a crossbody.
Slice bread number 2.
Slice bread number 2, I thought it was a crossbody. That's even cooler.
Yeah, no, he did the... I can't remember how it was set up, but yeah, he basically did... I think Kaz, didn't he boost the guy up on his shoulders and then he did... Slice bread number 2, off the top.
It looked a bit more like a crossbody to me, but that's... Yeah, fair play. It was very, very cool. Good match.
Yeah, I thought it was very good. It's probably the best match on the show.
There's a really good match coming up.
I forgot about the hardcore Royal Rumble.
There's another match I really liked, but we'll talk about it.
I don't know what that's going to be, because I don't think anything else was good on the show. But look, the second match was the hardcore Royal Rumble. I don't know why they called it a Royal Rumble, because that implies like 30 participants, and there were 6.
Yeah, but they did these staggered entrances, so I think that's where...
I've seen that referred to as a delayed entry battle royal. I think that's what DDT referred to it as.
Yeah, but if they're, you know, Hustle are leaning into the WWE stuff, so I understand why they went with calling it a Royal Rumble.
with six people. So I'm going to go through
With
the
six people.
six participants.
Go for it.
Number one was Kentaro Kanemura, which is your customary death match guy. He is out there with singing and dancing as usual.
Yeah, he does a little dance on his entrance, which I liked.
Yeah, that's the come out and play by the Offspring. He does a little dance to it. It's great. Second guy is Big Tom Ishii, very young with hair. Big Tom Ishii looking just dashing and nowhere near beaten up as he is now. The third guy, Masato Tanaka. Well, it's Masato Tanaka, isn't it? Number four is Flying Vampire 16. The Flying Vampires debuted on the Hustle House Volume 1 show. I thought they were really good.
I like them on that. I like the gimmick. The gimmick is cool, and they can do some exciting stuff. In this match, the flying vampire we got was eliminated almost immediately. Like he was a complete non-factor in the match.
Yeah, he did a couple of flips.
Yeah, I would like to have seen him in there longer. Just back to Ishii as well.
Okay.
I was really surprised that he was already quite good in this match. He already has the sort of intensity and the selling which he's known for.
Yeah. I feel like
But
he's always been good, but there was definitely a leveling up which took place around like 2013, I think, where he
yeah,
was just
that
taking
first snap.
everything that he did and putting it together and taking it to another level.
Yeah, it was around the time of that first never title run, even.
Is that first that Shibata G1
Yeah.
match? That's what really put him on the map for me.
Yeah, I think that's the point where everything really clicked for him.
So that's 9 years away. This is very early Ishii.
Yeah, and the sort of narrative I've always heard is that he was fine, but he wasn't anything great up until that point. But like he was one of the best guys in this match. I was just very surprised by that.
We also have another future New Japan star. The fifth guy in was Tomoaki Honma. And number six was Steve Corino.
Yeah, I could have done without Carino. I know when we started this series, I was like, Carino's a bit underrated. I think he's quite good. I've seen enough Steve Carino.
Yeah, he's going to be hanging around for quite a while as well, cause due to
Yeah.
his influence over 01 and the United States and back and forth. So we're going to see a lot more of him. But yeah, it was okay.
I think the issue for me is I'm also watching 1PW on the side, and he's all over that as
Oh
well.
no.
So I'm watching a lot of Steve Corino, and yeah.
No, I thought this was a lot of fun, though. I really enjoyed seeing like young Ishii and young Honma, and I do like Flying Vampire 16. I know he's only in it for a little bit, and obviously Tanaka. So there's a lot of guys in there that I rate, and I just had a fun time watching it. There's some really sickening bumps. The bump that Ishii took where he got superplexed onto like a pair of tables, and they'd set them up at an angle. I was like, why have they set him up like that? Because basically he lands with his spine lands like on top of the where the table legs would be instead of landing in the middle where the table breaks and it kind of helps you a little bit. He just right onto the legs. I don't understand that spot at all. But he was all right because it's Ishii.
This was good fun. I think of the sort of hardcore hustle matches we've seen, I would put this on the weaker end. But it was still like a lot of fun, and I like that these have really become a staple of these shows.
Yeah, it kind of breaks them up.
Yeah, it gives it the show some energy, some excitement. I'm all for it.
Yeah, and obviously, I am a fan of most of the people that are in it. especially Tanaka, at this stage in his career. He was one of the best in the world. And it annoys me sometimes when I see him fumbling around with people who are just nowhere near as good. That just incredible stuff where he had to cover for how shit he was just so frustrating to watch. But like here, he got better performances out of the people around him, and that should be a continuing trend. I think he's in it going forwards, Tanaka. I think he's one of their focal points of the hardcore division.
Yeah,
we'll find out, I guess, because I don't know.
Well, he's been on every show so far, so I'd imagine he sticks around, but you never know.
I hope so. Big fan. So those are like two standard kind of things that they're doing with the openers. You got the tag, and then you have the hardcore match. And then we got something a little bit wacky and different, which was super crazy, kind of ex of ECW, but not yet of WWE, because he went there but the following year, against Hustle Kamen, who I don't know who this is.
Right, so I think later on we get another Hustle Kamen, and they rebrand as Hustle Kamen Red and Hustle Kamen Yellow.
Yeah.
So I think this is whoever ends up becoming Hustle Kamen Red, which is on Cage Match.
Yeah, Hustle Kamen Red was Sugi, and there's right. no way in hell that's Sugi.
Fair, there's no way that's Sugi, you're right.
Sugi might have been Flying Vampire 16. I can completely believe that, but there's no fucking way he's this Red Kamen guy. Because Sugi is very graceful. He's very skillful. And there's just no.
Right. Who was the other? Who was Hustle Kamen Yellow then? Maybe.
I don't know.
What I will say is, I actually kind of really liked this match. Super Crazy came out with Joker face paint on for some reason. On his back.
It's not only that. He's got the Paul Stanley from Kiss star on his eye.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. On his back, it says Crazy for You. With the number 4 and the letter U. It was beautiful. To me, this felt like they were just trying to do a Super Crazy versus Tajiri match with Hustle Kamen sort of playing Tajiri.
Badly.
And badly. Badly, badly, badly. But I don't know, on some level I enjoyed it. I can't explain why. Like, I know intellectually this was not very good. But I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I described it as clumsy and sluggish with the odd, very successful high spot, and I stand by that.
Fair. Again, like I say, intellectually, I know this is bad.
I think I've just seen far too much Super Crazy. Like, I've watched him wrestle in the last couple of years, and he's very, very over the hill now. But
yeah,
he does still try. Like, there's still effort there. Like, he gets gassed after about a minute and there's sweat pouring off him, but he's still trying hard. And I kind of appreciate that. And I feel like that's the case here, where he was trying hard to put together a match. And the other guy, I did look up Hustle Kamen Yellow. It was Takayasu Fukuda from sort of the Toriyamon Mishinoku Pro school, but he was like a bigger, like, I don't want to say fatter, he was fatter.
larger,
he was a larger man. So that's kind of more in line with the physique that Hustle Kamen here has, but I still don't think it's him. I think I heard him yell something, and it sounded like he had an American accent.
That's even more interesting then. I wonder, we'll literally never know.
No, but nobody knows of these. A lot of our masked dudes are guys who we just don't have a clue under them, and they probably don't want people to know, so it's not widely publicised.
Yeah, I think, should we explain the Hustle Kamen gimmick a little bit? Because there's a lot to it.
Is it a Power Rangers thing? I don't understand.
Well,
This is not my era of pop culture references. I wasn't really paying attention to pop culture in 2004. I was a bit too old.
let me explain to you my youth then on.
Okay.
Well, so Power Rangers was based off of a Japanese show called Super Sentai. Super Sentai has a similar show called Kamen Rider, where instead of a group of people, it's a singular dude, essentially. And so I think Hustle Kamen is supposed to be based off of the Kamen Rider.
Okay.
That's essentially it. It's a show that's kept on going for years and years and years. It's still running, just like Power Rangers, and they sort of update it every, year or two or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not familiar. I would have looked this up for later episodes when there's loads of them, but I'm just now looking up this Kamen Rider. I
There
assume it
was,
just mean doesn't it just mean Masked Rider?
I think so, yeah.
Which would make sense because they're masked wrestlers.
It was Americanized as like Bug Rider or something like that, because the mask sort of looks like a bug
Yeah, I'm just
face.
looking at it now. He's got like a the two big eyes on the top there. Oh, the franchise began in 1971. The TV series.
There's a long history of, I think it's called tokusatsu or something like that. I've never tried to pronounce that word before. There's a long history of shows like this in Japan for kids. There was Super Sentai, there was these Kamen Rider things, and there was Ultraman. And they're all sort of in the same spirit, I guess. It's the big guys dress up in rubber suits fighting monsters sort of thing. It's in a similar vein to sort of the early Godzilla films, I think.
I'll tell you what it reminds me of, and if you've not seen this, I highly recommend it. Super Inframan.
I have no idea what that
It's
is.
hang on. Let me just get some details up on it because I can't remember the year it came out. So Super Inframan is a Hong Kong sci-fi action film produced by Shaw Brothers, 1975. It basically ripped off Ultraman and Kamen Rider. But it has just loads of like goofy things in rubber suits and basically a dude in they put like they turn him into like a cyborg killing machine who can change size and stuff. It's very weird. There's a lot of men in rubber suits. There's a lot of weird tentacle stuff, but it's not what you're thinking. There's I can't remember what some of the so the antagonists include Demon Princess Dragon Mom
Wow.
Witch Eye who got redubbed as She Demon for the Western audience. There's their rank and file henchmen of the Glacial Empire are called skeleton ghosts, and every the first time I saw them guarding an entrance or something, I burst out laughing because they've got little skull masks, but they're like skull masks with like a motorcycle helmet over the top, and it's got horns on.
Wow.
It's just fantastic. They've also got the plant monster is the one with the big killer vines. There's a monster with like really long hair. There's one with a great big drill. Basically, what I'm saying is I recommend watching Super Inframan. I've seen it recently on, I think it's Amazon Prime, so you can actually watch this quite easily if you want to.
I might hunt this down. I like how every show we do just ends with you recommending movies to me.
I've seen a lot of films, so like I kind of like it when wrestling reminds me of films, because then it's like I'm off on a tangent.
Anyway, but I think Super Inframan is of that same vein.
Yeah, it's basically a rip-off. So they ripped off, Super Inframan was like a rip-off of Kamen Rider.
Yeah, and that's the sort of gimmick they're going for here, and I think going forward they really lean into it a bit more.
Yeah, well, I was looking at the, because I happened to end up on the Hustle Wikipedia page while we were talking there, and basically there's a section for Hustle Kamen, and there's 8 of them.
Oh wow, I'm excited.
Yeah, there's 8 of them. Oh shit, I've just seen the identity of one of them.
Oh no.
I'm not going to spoil it for you.
Aww.
But oh my god, I've seen the identity of 2 of them. That, let's just say, of the 8, 2 of them are quite famous.
Okay.
So that's going to be very exciting.
I'm excited for, Hustle, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Imagine that. We've already given away the 2 of them. So Kamen Red is Sugi, who still wrestles with 0-1. And Yellow is Takayasu Fukuda, who I don't think I've ever seen him wrestle, because he works places that I didn't really watch that much. I've probably seen him wrestle for Michinoku Pro ages ago. So I look forward to seeing him in action.
Yeah, it sounds like he's one of these indie scum types.
He does look like indie scum. He's got kind of greasy hair. It's all shaved at the side. He's got a dirtbag goatee. He's wearing a vest.
Oh, what a hero.
Yeah, he looks like he's going to be... And he was trained by Skyder. Obviously.
Beautiful.
That was Hustle Kamen versus Super Crazy.
Yeah.
So that was... Did you notice he won with the code red?
Yes, I did.
I enjoyed that.
Because he's wearing red.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Code red.
Yes. Sorry, I've got... So, we always go on a tangent of what I've got on in the background. Yeah. I've got the 2000 Super J Cup on, and I think Ishii's one of the young boys at ringside.
I guess the time frames, right? What promotion is that in? Because it was in...
It was Michinoku Pro.
That stands a chance?
I'm not going to rewind it, but... That's fun.
I guess that does stand a chance.
It seems unlikely.
Well, he was... Where did he... Is anyone involved from one of my favourite title promotions, WAR, Wrestling and Romance?
Not that I've noticed, but I haven't been paying super close attention.
He was with them before he went to DDT. Incidentally, if you never looked into Ishii's background and you don't know his history, like, he kind of wrestled a lot of different places before going to New Japan. He was a bit of a journeyman. So yeah. he was in War because of the connection with Tenryu, but he also trained with Riki Choshu, which is why he's on these shows, because Choshu was like his mentor.
Yeah, right. I think we should get back to this Hustle show. We've gone on way too many tangents.
Okay. So the next match, we've already done the next match. It's Mark Coleman and Monsieur de Barbarossa versus Saiyan Fuji. I think we've covered that. It's weird that Barbarossa, who was this big monstrous villain, just gets into like loads of miscues with his heel tag team partner, ends up with Mark Coleman versus just throwing him out the ring and winning it by himself. It's just, yeah. If I was going to do that one way or the other, I'd probably do it the other way around. But
I think part of the reason is Coleman is sort of positioned as I would say upper mid card level guy. So, I mean, ideally you wouldn't book this match at all.
No,
I think
if it's done,
if it's done, I think, because Monsieur de Barbarossa is probably one of these lower card gimmick guys, so you don't want him. And Coleman is like involved in the main event angle, so I think you want to sort of protect him a little bit. I felt like Coleman is a little bit better in this match than what I've seen from him before. He seems to be improving a little bit, not like leaps and bounds.
It was like he kind of had to carry the match, so
yeah. But after that, we've got a fun skit.
Yeah.
So this is my interpretation of what's happened on.
Yeah.
Tai Chi walks in with a cake. He's got a cake for Kawada. I don't know why, but he's got a cake for Kawada. And then he asks Tai Chi to do the hustle. Sorry, he asks Kawada to do the hustle.
Yeah.
And then Kawada gets real pissed off and kicks him for some reason. Like, no, I'm not going to do the hustle. Why would I do the hustle?
Doesn't he point out, like, he's on the poster? It's a hustle show. You're on the poster.
And then for some reason he gets really offended that why would I be involved with hustle even though I've worked every single show so far and in storyline I'm defending the company. But no, I'm not going to do the hustle. And then he just sort of stares at the poster for a minute as if maybe I will do the hustle.
Which is, I mean, this is the first show where he kind of embraces the entertainer side of Kawada, which is a very limited side. When it comes to people going wacky, like Kawada's idea of going wacky is wearing a tracksuit as opposed to, you know, just trunks.
It was a beautiful tracksuit, though. It was beautiful.
They basically wanted to be Bruce Lee. So he's got like the Bruce Lee look.
Yeah. What's that movie? Way of the Dragon? Enter the Dragon?
It's the one that he died making. I can't remember what it's called.
Kill Bill is in wears that same tracksuit.
It's Game of Death.
Game of Death.
Game of Death. That's the one. So they reshot. So have you ever seen Game of Death?
No, but I know they reshoot it with like his son.
It's not only that. So they did reshoots to fill in for bits where Bruce wasn't there on account of him being dead. And there's so they had a couple of stand-ins, but also there's at least one shot where he's replaced by a cardboard cutout. And you got to admire the showmanship there. The film's not even that long. They've cut it into other films, but it's
Kawada. We might as well go into the next match, which Kawada features
and Yokoi, Hirotaka Yokoi against Giant Silver and Psycho the Death.
Right. First of all, we've already said it, but Kawada's tracksuit, absolutely beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
The leather jacket he comes out with, gorgeous, gorgeous, incredible. This man can dress.
Dress to impress.
Dress to impress. I have no idea who Hirata Yokoi?
This is going to come as a surprise to you, but he was involved in MMA.
I see.
Basically, if you don't recognize somebody from this era, MMA.
Okay. I really don't like Psycho the Death's gimmick.
I like the gimmick. I don't like his name. His name is just so bad.
The name is bad. I agree with you. I think the gimmick, it comes across, is very cringe to me. I don't know.
They're kind of like heading to a wackier version of Hustle, and for that you need some wacky characters. So Psycho the Death is I don't know, he's supposed to be an escape mental patient. He's basically the dude's playing a complete loon, and he seems to have an attachment to it, like a dolly, which I like the fact that they've established that. So on like Hustle House Volume 1, he's in a match, and the dolly is established as being like an important mental link to him. So like he doesn't like to see it get harmed. And I can't remember he wrestled at Hustle House Volume 1, but somebody basically stamped on it and kicked it out the ring and stuff. But Kawada picks it up in this match and gently places it down on the ring apron, because like he's not about that. He's about winning through fighting spirit.
Yeah. Kawada's a respectful man. He's not going to do anything to hurt Psycho the Deaf baby.
I mean, would I have liked to have seen him do a load of short kicks and then punted it out the ring? Yes, I would. But this is the character he's portraying. So this is where we're at.
The match was sort of fun, I guess. There's a point where Giant Silver gets in there with Kawada and sort of tries to outkick Kawada, which was just very, very funny. Very good wrestling. Beyond that, yeah. To be honest with you, I was just distracted by Kawada's jumpsuit. I was wondering if I should think about buying one. That's the level we were at.
Bruce Lee yellow tracksuit.
Yeah.
My major take home from this is that if you look at how basically Kawada, but especially Yokoi, just get crushed every time they're in there with Giant Silver, this is almost exactly how any of these four pillars would have been booked if they'd ever gone to WWF.
Yeah.
110%. So the bit where Kawada's getting chokeslammed by Giant Silver, if you ever wondered what it would have been like if one of them had gone to the West, that's exactly what it would have been like.
Do you think that's like an intentional, almost meta narrative? Because they're trying to be, you know, Hustle, the whole point is, it's sort of like WWF in Japan. So do you think there's a part of them going, well, if Kawada was in WWF in Japan, he'd be getting beat up by this big guy?
He does kind of feel that way. I'm not sure how smart the booking is, because a lot of it is just being weird, and I can't tell how much of it is being weird for the sake of it and how much of it has like a deep philosophical meaning about professional wrestling. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
I think after this match, there's a microphone that comes out for some reason, and the gold-plated one, or is that later on?
I don't remember that. Is that later?
That's later on. That's the post-match promo, the post-show promos.
Oh, okay, yeah. So the next match is the one you've told me you've got a lot of notes on this. So it's Shinya Hashimoto against Gama King.
Yes. Now, okay, I just need to center myself for a minute. So Gama King is a big Samoan dude who comes out with a toad mask, right?
Yes.
I'm disappointed that he didn't wrestle with the toad mask, but what can he do?
I am also disappointed.
Now, he comes out, he does a little dance, he kicks a young boy, he splashes on the young boy, he does a little dance. At this point, I'm in love. I love Gama King. I think there's no high. Pro wrestling can never reach these highs again. and then Shinya Hashimoto comes out. He has an afro for some reason. He's dressed as Elvis for some reason. He's replaced his old gear with like Elvis flares and a light up turn. I light up a belt buckle. And just, I reached euphoria. It's so good. It's so good. What is now on? My voice is cracking. I might cry. Now tell me.
What part of this do you want me to explain first?
Okay. Whew. Now, On House of House 1,
yeah.
Shinya Hashimoto has an afro match.
Yeah.
I'm still not sure what an afro match is.
I don't know. Because they did this whole thing of showing pictures of him mocked up to wear like an afro.
Yeah.
But I thought the idea was that if you won, then you weren't subjected to being forced to wear an afro. But he did win, and then he comes out wearing an afro, like an afro wig, the kind of thing you'd wear to a stag do. I wore an afro wig to a stag do once.
No, this was a high quality afro.
Oh, this is very
this wasn't your run. This wasn't your run of the mill stag do afro. This was custom made.
Oh yeah, it was high quality. So I don't really understand why, but then what they basically changed his gimmick around a little bit. So he comes out there. He's doing like the Elvis Presley routine. So like we've already had, this is how you do Elvis compared to like Josh Daniels should have been out there ringside young boy and taking notes on how to behave like Elvis Presley from Shinya Hashimoto. Cause he comes out, I don't know where the afro comes into it, but he's Elvis. He's doing the Elvis Presley mock karate stuff. He's blinged out to high heaven. They refer to him as the Hustle King.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because he's the Elvis King. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's genius.
It's honestly, it's beautiful. It's so good. Because like, I was freaked. As soon as Gama King walked out there, keeping in mind I've seen this show before and I just couldn't remember anything that happened. So Gama King comes out there with that frog's head on and I'm like, what? But then like Hashimoto comes out with the Elvis stuff and I'm like, oh my God, I forgot about this. And he is so good at the gimmick that I'm devastated. This is the only match like he does as the Hustle King. I think he we'd have seen some legendary stuff from Big Hash.
Yeah, because it's stuff. it's a real shame that this is sort of the end of his Hustle run, just because previously it feels like they've been trying to figure out what to do with Hashimoto. Hustle 1, he had a match which was really bad. Hustle 2 and 3, he was more sort of like almost like a manager type, but he wrestled in a couple of tag matches. It still didn't quite fit. And then they found magic with the Hustle King.
Uh-huh.
And it's just gone. And what a shame.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not under any illusions here that this was good as a match.
No, of course
it wasn't.
Not.
It was awful. But you can just take the pre-match introductions and that's professional wrestling. It's so good. He has that gold belt. That was great. But oh, he was wearing a medallion.
He was, yeah. Oh, it's so good.
The reveal as well, because he takes his top off and he's got the medallion underneath and the crowd pop. Because it's like he's got a medallion on. It's Shinya Hashimoto. He's wearing a medallion. And he's pulling it off.
Yeah, and he takes his light-up belt buckle off, and he's got, like, another big belt buckle underneath. It's so good. And, I mean, I want to take nothing away from Gama King, because Gama King was really funny. He's, like, a big... I describe him in my notes as, like, a mix between Rikishi and Umaga. And then he takes the toad head off and he's like a fake headhunter. And I'm so happy. It's just beautiful. And like, this match isn't very long, but he was sweating like an ocean, man.
I feel like however long it was, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it felt long. I don't know how long it was, but it felt long.
I could have watched it all day.
There was also a heel referee in this match. So previously the heel referee was Shimada, one of the bookers. They switched up here. The heel referee in this match, do you know who he is?
No, I was trying to figure it out. I wasn't sure.
So the referee here is Chuck Guillotine Legrand. And the reason I know this is because I saw him wrestle in Ring of Honor. So he was part of the like the Carino group. So like he'd be hanging around with like C.W. Anderson and Jack Victory and all those guys. Like Guillotine Legrand was in with them. So and I didn't actually notice this time round, but I read my old review of it from 2004, I think it was, and lo and behold, I point out the referee is Guillotine Legrand, and I'm like, so it is. So yeah, Chuck Legrand, Guillotine Legrand. He was still wrestling at this point, but not for much longer.
Yeah, I didn't love the heel ref shenanigans. Like, it was funny. It was funny. It adds to the incredible fun of this match. But, like, it was not very good.
I generally don't like heel ref stuff. But then the company is kind of taking the piss out of WWE and they did loads of heel ref stuff. So I can kind of see where they're coming from.
I think heel ref stuff can work. It works... it's worked a couple times in Mexico. The LA Park Eddie Kingston match from Rev Pro this year had a heel ref stuff. It worked quite well there. I think it doesn't work in this sort of setting. I think thinking about it now, I think it only really works when the heel ref very quickly gets his comeuppance. And that wasn't really the case here.
Well, it didn't really, nothing happened, did it? It's basically Hash got an armbar on or a triangle or something. He's basically choked him out. And Garma King, he's tapped out. And Chuck said, no, I didn't see that. And he just keeps it on until he's got no choice just to like stop the match. But he'd physically involved himself in the match before. So why didn't he just, you know, stamp on Hash's face and break the hold up? I don't know. Heel refs, there's no logic to them more often than not, and there was no logic to it here, so it didn't work for me. Like I said, the match was quite bad, but all of the introductions, it was great.
Yeah, beautiful, fantastic, best thing we've seen on any of these shows so far.
So that was your whole page of note. I heard the page turn over.
So good. We get another skit where Takada's backstage and his Leia chatting to Anjo and the other dude. And then Kevin Randleman jumps in like a kangaroo for some reason.
And he has a very good vertical leap.
Yeah, but why is he... who knows? And then they chat for a bit. And then Takada... See, this was the really, really weird bit to me. So the idea is supposed to be, you know, Takada's this asshole, so he's blowing smoke into his henchmen's faces. But he does it so, like, carefully and, like, considerably. It's so, I don't know, it felt really weird. It felt almost loving to me, you know? Like, this henchman really wants smoke blown in his face.
He's sharing this smoke with him. He's a good boss.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he blows it
in them Cubans.
Yeah, and he's just, you know, he's sharing the wealth. And
I like to think he's sharing his power.
Maybe. You maybe, because I think it was Anjo who ends up in the main event.
Anjo isn't the main event of this show. We'll get to that in a bit. But the point of Kevin Randleman being back there is he is... So Takada fires up Kevin Randleman by blowing smoke in his face. The other approach is where Ogawa is hyping up Wataru Sakata, and he just kind of slaps him on the back. And we'll see which approach pays off.
Oh, what a transition.
The match, Kevin Randleman versus Wataru Sakata, was fucking terrible.
So bad.
Where to start? I guess I don't know who the valet. I don't know what her name is, but Kevin Randleman has a quite tall, blonde valet in his corner, who I kind of appreciate her interfering a little bit on the outside. That's fine, but the match ends up kind of revolving around her interference, and she's got no idea what she's doing. Instead of a bit of setting up like an athletic competition of some description. And the absolute peak of this is where the valet just gets in the ring and throws a punch at Sakata, which misses and knocks out Randleman. Keeping in mind, like, I know she's quite tall, but she's clearly not strong enough to do that. Kevin Randleman, an established mixed martial artist, has been punched in the face a bunch of times. I'm just, what are they thinking? What were they doing?
Yeah, it was, I think, the interference and stuff, it was fine. It was not very well done. My issue with it is, this is a valet who we've never seen before,
mm-hmm.
has been given no introduction whatsoever, just sort of walks out with Randleman, I assume is one of the Hustle Divas from those segments, and we have no idea who she is or anything, and the entire match is built around her. There was a very, very, very 2004 spot where Sakada bends her over his knee, yeah, and spanks
that,
her.
That is very WWE,
yeah,
thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it was, which was really, really uncomfortable. This whole match stunk, absolutely. I think, I don't...
Sorry, I just looked up what Kevin Randleman's last MMA fight was before this. And yeah, it was against Mirko Krokop, and he won with a knockout. Bullet punch. Can you imagine agreeing to that spot the same year that you've knocked out Krokop?
Clearly that woman should go against Krokop. Yeah, I think I'm not as anti-valet stuff as you are. I think partly because I just sort of grew up on this era of WWF, WWE even. So it's not as offensive to me. But I think the way it was done was really, really bad.
I did say, like, some of the stuff at the start was fine, and then it just got progressively worse.
Yeah. And I agree with you, that punching spot was one of the most egregious parts of it. But the whole match stunk. There was a point in this match where I think perfectly sums up Kevin Randleman. He does a really, really cool splash onto Sakata and then can't quite pin him correctly, and Sakata almost has to help him pin himself. So he can do some cool stuff, but he has almost no fundamentals. And yeah, just awful, awful all around.
Yeah, I don't know what happened, but Sakata got bust open sort of over the bridge of his nose as well at the end of the match, which I think that got him more over than anything else in the match. All the shit with the valet, he ended up getting over because he got busted open and won anyway.
Yeah, for sure.
That was accidental, but I think that's what got him over, because the crowd were really into him at the finish, which is a good job, because they've done a terrible, terrible job of building Sakata so far, and he's basically going to be their ace. So it's you've got to start somewhere. It's here.
That's a real shame. One slight saving grace, I want to say, from this match, which did stink, I want to make that very clear. I liked Randleman at one point does these cool, like, vertical knees things. Normally, you know, with knee strikes in a submission, it's more you're laying them in from the ground. where Randleman was almost up vertical and the knees were coming down onto his opponent, into Sakata, which like is quite a cool spot I've never seen before. And he does a cool splash, running off the ramp, jumps up onto the top rope, and into a splash into the ring, which I really liked.
He's got incredible athleticism. We've said that about him a couple of times before, but yeah, I like what you're saying there about the fundamentals. That does seem to be his downfall, is he'll do something incredible, and you're like, jeez, oh, why is this guy not made it? And then it's like, oh, here comes a really bad Irish whip, or just something really basic, and it looks terrible. And that's when you remember how green he is and how inexperienced he is.
Yeah, and I think we're sort of figuring out why he's not a guy we saw more of, I think, as this goes.
I'm still surprised he didn't go into wrestling full-time.
Yeah, but I think if it was something he was really more interested in, he would have learned those fundamentals, or someone would have taught him those fundamentals.
That makes sense, I guess. But obviously, like his MMA career has peaked at this point, and at this point he is 15-7, and when he retired he was 17-16.
Oh wow.
So yeah, the coming up is there's an awful lot of losses, like a staggering amount.
Yeah. There was another little skit after this, which I don't think anything noteworthy happened. The only thing I can say is I like that, you know, before they do the hustle, we are monster thing, the participants ask each other if you're ready. And, you know, I like that kind of politeness with my big heel unit, you know? We're going to do this choreographed dance, but let's make sure we're both ready.
They are a very polite unit.
Yeah. And then we get the main event.
Oh, this is terrible.
Yeah. Choshu really... first of all, I was amazed at how over he seemed.
Yeah.
Like, the crowd absolutely loved him. Which, considering he's not... like, I understand now the whole gimmick of what he's supposed to be. But considering he hasn't really done much in Hustle yet...
Yeah, I
was shocked.
He's still the biggest star in this match by a country mile. Like, nobody else is close to him. I know they've tried to push Ogawa as a big deal, but he really isn't. Choshu, former IWGP champion, three times, I think. He was a big star, and he was a very good wrestler. He's very popular, and it's only really... I mean, I don't even think this is the end of him, really. He's still going okay for a few years after this. Had his own promotion, Ricky Pro, which is kind of a little offshoot from New Japan. Oh, there's been so many offshoots from New Japan.
I mean, he only retired like last year or the year before.
Yeah, it was, 2019 he retired.
2019.
And his level of ability has not changed. So, like, the Ricky Choshu that you see in 2004, he could go at that level. That was pretty much the level he'd retired at. he just dropped down to there, and that was it. But then you have to remember, he debuted in mid-70s. This is a guy who's already been around for a very long time. And he was immensely popular. Obviously, we talked about the fact that the whole thing's basically a rib. That he's taking it seriously and everyone else thinks it's a joke, including the fans. And that's what this is all about. Like Dan Bobish and Joe, who are the opponents for Ogawa and Choshu, they're just a joke, really. They come out in daft masks. They wrestle daft. There's no real challenge here.
They're wearing like these really, really bright singlets. Bobish is kind of like almost a fake Vader in his bright red. Anjo, bright purple, does the chicken dance at one point. Like
Anjo is all about the personality. There's no doubt about that. It's all personality. Yeah.
And even Ogawa was in like a massive white singlet thing. And so everyone's in these bright, ridiculous colours. And Choshu's just there in his, you know, simple black trunks. And it, like, now, knowing what's supposed to be happening, it really, really is obvious, I guess, that, you know, Choshu's the guy taking it really, really seriously and around all of these crazy, colourful characters who don't seem to care that much.
Yeah. It's pretty abundantly clear that the level of efforts are extremely low for everyone apart from Choshu. But I think he sees it as his responsibility to carry these young guys to a better match or something. But
I could buy that.
I think he's just missing the joke.
You know, I think it would be... I'd be surprised if he's missing the joke because it seems fairly obvious. Although you did also have to explain it to me for me to get it. So maybe it's not that obvious.
Yeah. So we'll see how that plays out.
After the match, there's a big brawl between the heels and the faces. This is where in the middle of the ring, there's a big golden microphone, which the faces promo into. I assume it's setting up whatever is happening next. The only thing I could pay attention to was the fact that all of the faces were wearing these really, really bright colours and almost looked like Power Rangers.
Yeah.
But that's all I've noticed, really.
So what do you think this is setting up as the main event at Hustle 5?
I would imagine... maybe not necessarily Hustle 5, but I imagine the point is we're going to like a big Survivor Series elimination tag match at some point.
Okay. So do you want to have a guess at what the main event is for Hustle 5?
I'm going to go with Ogawa has to be there. I don't know, Ogawa Takada? That seems too early.
Yeah, no. So I'm looking at the card. I'm going to run through the card. So I don't have results up. I just have the card. So this is the card for Hustle 5. So the opener, and you're going to be shocked here, it's Katayashi and Leonardo Spanky. They're tagging against the Flying Vampires.
Ooh.
So that should be fun because Flying Vampires looked really good, I thought, on their debut match. And it's Kaz and Spanky. They're always good. So that should be good. Second match is Kawada. Kawada's in the second match. Kawada and Yokoi, that proven tested tag team who are 0-1, against Mark Coleman and Monster C, who is...
That's Steve Corino. That's
Steve Corino. Okay.
So they're basically running back the same match without Monsieur de Barbarossa.
A better wrestler in it. Then... we've got a tag, Hustle Kamen Blue and Hustle Kamen Red, which at this point is Sugi, against Devil Piroth 1 and 2.
Okay.
Don't know who that is. Don't know who that is at all. Oh my God. Match 4, Giant Silver versus the Great Sasuke.
Oh, God bless you. That's amazing. That's so good.
That is very WWE style booking, isn't it?
Amazingly, Sasuke is just wrestling on this Super J Cup I've got on the background.
I put money on Silver winning in 5 minutes or less.
That sounds so funny. I'm excited.
Then we've got the hardcore match. Hardcore six man tag. We've got Super Crazy, Psycho the Death, and Piranha Monster Zed. Oh, God, I hope that's Zebra Man. tagging against Masato Tanaka, Kintaro Kanemura, and Wato Sakata. So Sakata bloodied at Hustle 4, has been thrown in the hardcore division. See if that gets him over.
He's earned it. He's earned it, you know.
Match six is Riki Choshu and Rikishi.
Oh, wow.
Against Dan Bobbish and Oyayigari. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, but Rikishi and Dan Bobbish. Rikishi and Dan Bobbish sounds like so fun.
To escape various licensing laws and WWE copyright, he is Hustle Rikishi. not Rikishi.
Okay.
So main event. Any guesses on the main event?
Well, okay. Let's think about this logically. I know Hashimoto is not around anymore. Ogawa has to be on it.
Yeah.
I have literally no idea. I imagine Ogawa's in a tag match, not a singles, because they're not giving him singles.
Oh, they are now.
Okay, so, it's a singles.
So it's a singles. Ogawa is wrestling under his alter ego, his pseudonym of Jude O. yeah. And he's wrestling against Russian 54.
Who's Russian 54?
Who's Russian 54? So I've clicked on Russian 54 and it's Jack Bull. Jack
is that
Bull. Jack Bull was in, of course he was in 01, but he was WWE developmental as Greg Gruthius. Greg Gruthius. Oh my god, he must have sucked. They only give the worst ones like names that bad. Greg, and he went back afterwards as well. Oh my god. He went back,
so
and then he wrestled.
I was
Jack
never
going to
guess this.
He wrestled
I was never
Jack
gonna get
Bull
this.
In Ohio Valley, and I clicked on him to see what his first match was in Ohio Valley, and it was against CM Punk.
Oh, yes.
I almost wish I could see that. He was there for quite a while. I'm just going through Jack Bull matches now, and he kind of retired in 2009.
But he's doing a weird Russian gimmick.
Yeah, Russian 54. I'm guessing this is a masked gimmick. It feels like it has to be.
Yeah, but I'm confused because there's been no allusions to the Hustle guys hating the Russians up to this point. I mean, Bobbish is kind of, at one point, was a... He reminded me of a fake Ivan Koloff, but...
Huh. That's Hustle 5. Also, Hustle House Volume 2 is before Hustle 5, so I'm going to have a quick look at that. Kaz Hayashi and Leonardo Spanky in the opener. That's a surprise. Wrestling against Minoru Fujita and Ikuto Hidaka.
Oh, shit.
Wow, okay.
That sounds great.
That is, yeah. Psycho the Death versus Riki Choshu. So...
Wow.
That's going to be a lovely squash. I think they've run this match twice. Hustle came in blue and red against Devil Piroth 1 and 2.
Okay.
And there's a six-man tag with Anjo, who's now Commander Anjo, tagging with Mark Coleman and Himalayan Bigfoot.
Oh, beautiful.
I have no idea who that is. Himalayan Bigfoot against Yokoi, Shimoji Fuji, who we saw, and Kazuya Yuasa. Oh, that's Gainer.
Okay. I don't know who that Gainer, is. The name sounds familiar.
Then we've got Kawada and Taichi tagging up against Hizakari and Carino. Carino under the Monster Sea gimmick. And the main event for that is Sakata and Ryoji Sai against Dan Bobbish and Shimada, who is the booker.
Yeah, that Hustle House stuff, it sounds better than Hustle House 1, but I'm not.
I'm going to certainly give it a go. It's on YouTube, so if you are listening, you can watch that for free. And then Hustle 5, you need my secret connections to get a hold of Hustle 5, but yeah. I will do. And I'm not going to look any further ahead. I'm just going to leave it because like, I need to know on one show at a time. We'll see where we're going.
I'm so excited. I'm still thinking about Sasuke Silver.
Yeah. That's going to be an event. It's not going to be that long, is it?
No, I think just one thing I've noticed I wanted to talk about a little bit. It seems very clear that they don't have as much money as they did originally. These last couple cards haven't had any Gaijin fly-ins.
Yeah,
that's sort of been a staple.
Yeah.
And I know you said the attendance starts to drop off around now.
Yeah, so the attendance for Hustle 4 is 11,000, but they've done... I think that's a pretty decent crowd, considering they don't really have any star names on it. Just for context, Hustle 3 was 12,000, and that was with the Outsiders and Foley. And Hustle 2, which is the card with... oh, no, Hustle 2 is the one where they didn't have anyone. They did 10,000 for Hustle 2. And back at Hustle 1, they did 12,000 at Saitama Super, and that was with Goldberg on top. So all of those crowds are pretty good. Like, I'd be happy... If I'm Hustle, I'd be happy with any of them. They're fine. Hustle 5, in the same building as Hustle's 2 to 4, they ran Hustle 5 with 5,500 in attendance.
Wow.
That's a pretty big drop-off.
That's like half it's of what you've
basically
got previously.
Half. I'm just looking at attendance for Hustle 6 is 7,700. They ran a different building, so I don't know the capacity in Nagoya. But that is alarming. It's an alarming drop-off. From the first four shows, all did really well. And I get the feeling tickets probably went on sale for the first four shows pretty close together, so people were buying them up thinking we're in for this exciting new venture. And then five probably went on sale after, like, the first one had happened. So maybe you're starting to see the drop-off there.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting thing to keep track of, because I remember we talked about, especially on Hustle 1, the big question was just how can they afford to run these sort of mega supercards?
It's like a tax write-off for Pride, but...
It does, but it's very clear we're getting to the point where even as a tax write-off, it's just not feasible to run major, major shows. Or shows with major, major stars on them.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that when we're going forwards. It's interesting that they ran a lot of shows in Yokohama, at the Yokohama Arena, and... Basically, up to this point, it's all the big shows apart from Hustle 1 have been at Yokohama. And Hustle 5 is like the last show they're running in Yokohama.
Right.
Until Hustle Mania, which took place in November 2005, so over a year in the future. So that's the next time they run Yokohama. So they tried to build themselves back up by the looks of it, which isn't a bad idea.
No, and again, it'll be interesting to watch whether it's a case of the quality of the shows has gone down, and that's why... Because I said at the start of this, you know, this wasn't the most... It wasn't as good as Hustle 1, 2, and 3, but talking through it, it was a very fun show.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. The quality definitely drops off after that. I think what you're seeing here is the same as like WCW when they were really good. So, like, the undercard is strong, and then the good group versus evil group kind of takes over the second half of the card, and the quality just drops off a cliff.
Yeah. So yeah. I think it'll be interesting to keep an eye on how much that whole angle takes over the rest of the card and how that's reflected in attendance and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll keep an eye on all those things. So next time we'll probably be looking at Hustle House Volume 2, which was in September of 2004, and Hustle House 5, which was at the end of September 2004. Just for reference, this was July. So they've been running for 6-7 months. Hustle 1 was in, well, it was the same day as Wrestle Kingdom. It was January 4th.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're kind of halfway through the first year.
Cool. I think we're done.
Yep. See you next time, folks.